This weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another worrisome stretch for stocks. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The ongoing fall by the S&P 500 has put the index into its second bear market of the pandemic. Here, the threats presented.
With the price of lawn mowing services soaring and it getting harder to even find a service, homeowners and landscapers alike are struggling.
In a post-pandemic environment, class reunions are back. A networking expert tells us how to avoid awkward moments.
And with pent-up travel demand hitting Europe, tourists can expect long lines for nearly all major attractions.
Everyone that I have spoken to is just pointing to pent-up demand. People have been on lockdown for a while, and a lot of people are ready to go out and travel again. And this summer, with a lot of the COVID travel restrictions gone, a lot of people are finding that now is the time to go out and do that international vacation.
Bailey Schultz at USA Today on the large crowds in Europe. We start with a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Steep downturns of stocks by 20% or more are relatively rare, but how long they last could portend damage for you and the economy. Insight from Stephen Gandel, news editor at the New York Times. Steve, set this up.
Yeah, so, you know, we had this weird phenomenon before this where we were all locked down in our homes. I know there was a little bit of a lag between the story I'm going to tell you, but we were all locked down in our homes, and the stock market and the economy wasn't really happening in any kind of way like it normally does. And then the stock market started taking off, and it kept going up and up and up. And yeah, we got out of our homes, and yeah, the government helped out. But the market really took off. And it either went too high, or it was, anticipating all of this stimulus that the government gave, and that we were coming back. And so it reacted early to this kind of juicing of the economy or this kind of assistance. And now we're at the point where the economy is very hot, but the stock market, depending on what you believe, could be reacting early to the idea that this is not sustainable, right? Because of inflation, because economies don't rage for this long, for this hot, for this long. We're headed for, a slowdown, a crash. We don't know. And so that's what the stock market is. The stock market early was, predating the recovery from the pandemic. Now maybe it's foreshadowing the kind of fall from the recovery that we've had.
Right. And obviously investors are reacting and listening with all ears to what the Fed is saying and doing.
Right. So, and that's the problem that in trying to figure out what this bear market is, right? So usually, and many times, when stocks go down and go into a bear market, it means that a recession is coming. But stocks can also go down just because they were too expensive. And one of the reasons that stocks had got expensive or high is because interest rates had been so low for so long. And so the investors are intensely attuned to the Fed because of this belief, whether it's right or not, and it has been right certainly recently, that when interest rates go up, stocks are going to go way down because interest rates slow the economy. They also, just higher interest rates make assets worth less, and that includes stocks, because anyone who wants to borrow and any company who wants to borrow, it's going to cost a lot more to do that borrowing. And so those kind of assets are worth less. So we don't know. We don't know if the stock market is repricing for a higher interest rates. And I will tell you, the higher interest rates usually are an indication of a good economy, right? So we don't know if the stock market is repricing for higher interest rates, or again, the stock market saying, wait a second, this can't continue. We're worried about the Fed raising interest rates too high, where people can't afford to pay off their loans, and they can't afford to borrow to buy houses and cars, and the economy is really going to suffer.
We're speaking with Steve Gandell, news editor at the New York Times. His piece is called What Happens When Stock Markets Become Bears. All right, so as you point out in the story too, a recession is not imminent. How come? What could work in, I don't know, you know, consumers or investors' favor?
Well, I mean, look at inflation, right? Prices keep going up because people keep buying. And if you, the unemployment rate, the jobs numbers, there's still many more openings than people out there looking for jobs. Like the job market is at a historic goodness. I don't know the right word right now, but it's very good for people looking for jobs. So those things are not usually things that happen when we're about to enter a recession. But what can happen is these things can have a ripple effect. They can cause prices to rise very rapidly, as they have been, and get to a point where, you know, the American consumer can't afford all of their money's now going to fill up their gas tank, and they don't have as much money to go out for restaurants or go on trips or whatever. And so that can, it can, the overly hot economy can itself be a kind of a mechanism to hit the brakes. And so the Fed's job is to try to do that first. And what people are worried, because there's really no way to slow the type of inflation we've had, which is the highest it's been in 40 years and looking like it's going to stay hot. There's really no way for the Fed to stop that inflation, especially because this inflation comes from supply chain and from the end of the pandemic and things that the Fed, you know, itself didn't create. There's no way for the Fed to stop that unless it really hits the brakes and really pushes demand right off a cliff. And that's what people are concerned that even though the economy's hot right now and could take a little bit of a drubbing from the Fed, the amount of punch the Fed will have to give the economy to stop inflation, it might be too much.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Gandell, news editor at the New York Times. Coming up next, is social media a problem for you?
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with expertise and tools with Windows 11 to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. To do more with a Latitude laptop, Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for joining us. We all feel like we're addicted to our phones at times, right? Mindlessly scrolling through social media. How we address our behavior, though, depends on whether we truly have an addiction or just an unhealthy habit we can kick with a few adjustments. The Difference, from Julie Jargon, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Julie, help us out.
A lot of people feel like they're addicted to their phone, but the word addiction means some very specific things, and most people don't fall into the range of addictive phone use. But a lot of people do compulsively scroll through social media. And I found a journal article that kind of gave a good definition of what constitutes compulsive use. And it's basically any sort of behavior, you know, that where we feel we have to do something repeatedly, even when we know we really don't have to. And where that becomes a particular problem when it comes to social media is when that compulsion to check social media overrides our better judgment and causes us to do dangerous things like checking our phones while we're driving or crossing the road.
So tips for breaking out of that would be what?
Well, there are a number of things that that people can do to kind of understand their social media usage. And, you know, one of the things about distinguishing a habit from a true addiction is that habits are kind of things that are done on autopilot. And so some experts I talked to said one of the best ways to, you know, treat a bad habit and kick a bad habit is to be aware of them and bring it into kind of consciousness. So one of the ways to do that is to start logging how often you check your social media during a day. And that can include those little moments where we're waiting for a phone call or we're riding in an elevator when we're not doing anything else, those kind of spare moments where we just instinctively peruse social media. So if you kind of collectively keep tabs throughout the day on all of those times, you can start to see a pattern and see like how much of your time is really being eaten up by social media. And so there are a number of things you can do. You can turn off the notifications to your apps. You can set do not disturb on your phone and set it to turn on automatically during either work hours or when you're driving. And really the key thing is to fill that time that you would normally spend on social media, especially if it's a larger block of time, with other activities. Because as one expert I spoke to said that if you don't increase other things as you reduce social media, attempts to reduce social media usage won't work.
Some people go through withdrawal symptoms too, you said, like what?
Yeah, they're, just like with substance abuse, any sort of behavioral dependency can also come with withdrawal symptoms. And those can include things like feeling anxious when you're not doing the activity that you have a dependence on. So in the case of social media, if you're not using it, if you're feeling irritable and anxious when you can't, look at social media, depression, strong cravings for using social media, and insomnia, those can all be considered withdrawal symptoms and an indication that, maybe you've got a more serious issue to deal with.
Speaking of serious too, I guess you might also find that social media is getting in the way of life. What would that look like?
Yeah, that's really one of the key things to kind of figure out if you've got a bigger problem than just kind of a habit that you might want to work on. And that is, when you're continuing to do something despite harm to yourself and or others. So if you've got family members who are telling you you're on your phone way too much, this is getting in the way of things, if it's impacting your sleep, your work, your relationships, other aspects of your health, but you continue to use social media anyway because you feel you can't stop, that's a strong indication that you need to do something about it.
What else stood out?
Well, a couple of other tips that I've heard from experts is to kind of take a break, which sounds easier than it probably is to do. But one expert, calls it a dopamine fast and recommends that people just take 24 hours to just not touch any screen-related devices and prepare for that by letting people know that you won't be reachable. And if possible, take that fast with family and friends so you're all kind of in it together. And then during that time, pay close attention to how you're feeling. And if you note down whether you're feeling anxious or irritable.
Thanks, Julie. Julie Jargon, she writes the family and tech column at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, why it seems everybody is in Europe.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. International tourists are rushing back to Europe thanks to so-called revenge travel. Fewer COVID restrictions and a weaker euro are added bonuses for U.S. travelers. But while dollars are stretching further in Europe, so are the lines. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Yes, the costs of driving and hotel rooms are painful, but if you're able, this may be the time to spring for the European adventure. But you might have to endure more crowds than ever. More from Bailey Schultz of USA Today. Bailey, why are tourists flocking to Europe?
Yeah, everyone that I have spoken to is just pointing to pent-up demand. People have been on lockdown for a while, and a lot of people are ready to go out and travel again. And this summer, with a lot of the COVID travel restrictions gone, a lot of people are finding that now is the time to go out and do that international vacation. So people on the ground over in places like Italy and France are just seeing crowds, from what they told me, like they've never seen before.
Do we know if the numbers are close to pre-pandemic tallies?
So the data out there, what we know from experts is that this year is not expected to match up to 2019 levels quite yet. But from what people are telling me on the ground with small business owners over in France and whatnot, they're saying that they haven't personally seen levels. So Kind of depends on who you ask. We'll have to wait a bit to get firm data on just what visitation rates are like this summer and how they compare. But just know from what people are saying on the ground that it is busy and crowded out there.
Bailey, what are some of the hot spots in Europe for the summer?
I think travelers go to kind of the usual. The people I spoke to were either working in or taking visits to France and Italy. So that's where I saw or I heard of examples of some of that, those crazy crowds. But I think Europe is a very popular destination. These experts are saying that U.S. tourists are one of their major customers. And so people on the ground over there are excited on one hand to see this sort of customer coming back. But on the other, it's somewhat overwhelming when you own a restaurant and you're seeing crowds just piling in like they never have before.
We're speaking with Bailey Schultz of USA Today. Bailey, if you're planning a trip to France or Italy and you want to see some of the most famous sites there, if you don't plan way ahead and get tickets, are you going to be able to get there?
From what people were telling me, it will be tricky where things are. Travelers will have to do a lot more pre-planning nowadays. It's a lot harder to get into places last minute. I had one traveler tell me that if you want to see certain sites, you have to get there at 7 a.m. So it's a little more of a challenge these days. Another piece of advice I got from someone who works in the tourism industry is that if you can, maybe wait to have that trip until after the summer is over. Things are likely going to slow down when we get past August. So that is something to keep in mind as well if you haven't booked any tickets yet.
What is the dollar shaping up against the euro? How's that looking for Americans?
Yeah, so that is, for U.S. travelers at least, this is something that is good news where the conversion rate has been dropping, which basically means that when you exchange with U.S. dollars for euros, they go a lot further these days. So not sure exactly what will happen in the future, how long this sort of dip will last. But for the time being, if you are converting your money into euros, you're going to get a few more euros back. You're really going to go farther.
Now, the U.S. recently announced that it would be dropping the decision to have COVID testing before you return to the U.S. Do we think that might spur even more international travel?
That is something that I have had people tell me where with the lessening of these COVID restrictions, that is influencing people's decision to travel, where I think before people were worried that they would test negative, they get stuck in a foreign country on their trip, and that is less of a concern now.
So if you have time off this summer and you can't possibly go in the fall, is it still possible to take a European vacation?
I think it's possible. I wouldn't say it's not possible. I would say just be prepared that if you do go, you will see crowds. Things might be busy over there. September, October, the weather's still pretty nice, but the crowds are less severe.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with travel reporter Bailey Schultz at USA Today. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour. Charging station skepticism. Also, surviving a class reunion post-pandemic. Plus, how inflation hits lawn care. And Father's Day gifts, plus a quality dad joke. That in about 20 minutes. Well, the Biden administration wants fast EV charging stations every 50 miles along major highways. The Wall Street Journal, though, says some western states like Utah, Wyoming, Montana, New Mexico, and Colorado are raising concerns about rules proposed for receiving a share of the coming $5 billion in federal funding to help jumpstart a national EV charging network. In-depth analysis from Rob Enderle, founder of the Enderle Group. Rob, can this be done?
Not cost effectively. I mean, the issue here is you have to get power to the charging stations that are removed from any charging or electrical infrastructure. And a lot of the states in the middle of the country have large areas that are unpopulated. And that means there are no power lines run. There is no power infrastructure. And so how are you going to power these charging stations? And then even if you do run power to them, which would be incredibly expensive, the level of EV acceptance in those areas is low. And so you might only get a car charging on them a couple times a month, if that. And so how do you assure that there's enough money coming in to at least maintain these stations so that 4 years from now, we don't have a bunch of very expensive power stations that have rusted out and no longer function? So it, at least as they've conceived it right now, because of the lack of electrical infrastructure on a lot of these highways, you can't put one of these things every 50 miles. At least you can't do it and have them be both green and profitable. You can put them in and have, say, diesel generating stations next to them to keep them charged up, but that's hardly green. And and you could try to do solar or wind power to them, but it would require a pretty good sized plant and large battery capacity, which would make them exceedingly expensive. And once again, you wouldn't have the money to maintain them. So the costs at the front end would be lost in terms of benefit, because the back end, they wouldn't be getting the maintenance money they would need to keep them running. So no, as of right now, we don't have the infrastructure in place to drop one of these stations cost effectively every 50 miles across the nation. It would be far better to focus on providing charging infrastructure in the cities where you have EV density.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal analyst and founder of the Enderle Group, and we're talking about the Biden administration's plan for electric vehicle charging stations on highways. It's a tough spot, I guess, because the president also is pushing for, I forget the percentage, but I think ideally he'd prefer most Americans to own an electric vehicle right in the next, I don't know, 20, 25 years or so. It just doesn't seem workable.
Well, and given the automotive industry has indicated they're going to finish their pivot by 2030, it's going to happen far quicker than that. And right now we're already experiencing fairly severe shortages on lithium for the current battery technology, and the next generation battery technology isn't due until after 2025. So we're kind of between a rock and a hard place. The technology isn't yet where it needs to be. The charging infrastructure, the electrical infrastructure, isn't where it needs to be, and the grid is already at risk due to overcapacity. And so we're kind of working at the wrong end of the problem right now. We probably should be first focusing on fixing the clean electrical generation problem before we start failing over to more and more coal and oil fired plants, because we don't have enough nuclear or renewable energy capacity for the electrical vehicle conversion yet. So we're trying to do everything at once, and this is probably something that should be done in phases of fixing electrical generation problems and distribution problems should come first, and then the rollout to electrical vehicles would make more sense.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal analyst and founder of the Enderle Group. Coming up next, avoiding awkwardness at class reunions because they're back.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could be with us. At least one report says class reunions are back. The Wall Street Journal says reunion planning companies are seeing an influx of interest from alumni groups. If you get an invite and decide to go, here are some things to keep in mind from networking expert Ivan Meisner. Ivan, give us guidance.
Well, I think it's important to think about how you introduce yourself to your friends. Well, you know, what did they're going to want to know. So what are you doing? And, you know, the whole idea of the old elevator pitch idea, never do an elevator pitch in the elevator. The idea with an elevator pitch is to just have a short description of what it is that you do. And the most important thing with that is to talk about the afters. The afters are, you know, when you do what you do, what's it going to look like after? And when you're talking to people, one last thought on this is pass the eyebrow test. My friend Sam Horn calls it the eyebrow test when you tell people what you do. If somebody's eyebrows scrunch down, you've confused them. Mm. If they go up, you've got their attention.
I like it. How about some of the basics? You open the door, you enter, let's say, a big banquet room or whatever. You're by yourself, and it seems like everybody already is chatting in a small group. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, one of the things you want to do is look for open twos, open threes, and open groups. And open two, imagine that you have the God view and you're looking down on the room. A closed two would be two people standing perpendicular to each other. A closed three would be like a triangle looking down. What you want to look for are open twos, open threes, open groups. People that looking down from above, it would be like a V. For Victor, they're standing askew a little bit, or an open three would be like a U, so that you can just slip right in and start talking to the people that you know. And even if you didn't know them real well, you could slip into those groups and start a conversation. People you know might also be standing around by themselves. You can also go and talk to them. But look for open twos, open threes, and open groups.
How about those first words out of your mouth as you walk up, though? Hi, I'm so-and-so, or hey, what are you up to? Like,
I would be honest. It's great to see you again, and, you know, catch me up. What have you been doing? How are things going?
We're speaking with Ivan Meisner, networking expert, also founder of BNI, the big networking organization. We're talking about how to put your best foot forward at a class reunion. What should you not do?
Well, you know, I think you don't want to get too personal too quickly, especially with people that you didn't know well. You got to use contextual intelligence here. So how well you knew them in school should determine how deep you go in a conversation. And if you knew each other well, it's okay to get more personal than if you barely knew them. And, you know, stay away from the spiked punch. Don't get drunk. Don't get drunk at any event. As a rule of thumb, it's dumb to get drunk at a reunion.
Yeah. I mean, hold something in your hand if you want, right? But not.
Yeah, no, listen.
You'll be chugging it.
I'm not a teetotaler. I love wine. I'll have a couple of glasses of wine, but don't. It's not back to high school or college days. You know, don't get drunk. Stay professional.
Should you be treating people like clients here, pitching products and stuff? I mean, is the door open for that?
No, I wouldn't pitch people. It's the wrong environment. I think one of the problems with networking and the way it's done is that all too often people use networking as a face-to-face cold calling opportunity.
Yeah.
Hi, Gordon. My name's Ivan. Let's do business.
Right.
You know, and that's just not the way. That's not what networking should be about. Networking is more about farming than it is about hunting. It's about cultivating relationships. So this is an opportunity for you to reconnect with people and rebuild that relationship with them before you ever start pitching them on your business.
Would business cards be outdated here? You'd be swapping phone numbers potentially? What's that like?
Yeah, I don't think business cards are outdated. I really don't. You know, we tend to take those business cards back and put them in our database or in Outlook. We tend not to keep business cards like we used to many, many years ago. I don't know where you end up on the age range here, Gordon, but I'm an old guy, and I had the Rolodex, you know, where you put the business card in and you'd flip the Rolodex. So, you know, we don't have that anymore. But yeah, business cards, you definitely want to take business cards, if for no other reason than to stay in touch with the people that you connect with.
Thanks, Ivan. Ivan Meisner, networking expert. Coming up next, is it time for DIY lawn care?
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with expertise and tools with Windows 11 to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. To do more with a Latitude laptop, Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending part of your Father's Day weekend with us. Lawn care isn't only a lot more expensive this season, it's also harder to find someone to cut your grass. The price of lawn mowing services is up 22.4%. Tree trimming up 9% year over year as of May. How landscapers and homeowners are managing all this from Rachel Wolf, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Rachel, what are you hearing?
So a lot of landscapers are having to raise their prices because their costs of doing business have just gone up dramatically with fuel, labor, repairs on equipment, all really surging right now. And, you know, they're wrestling with having to pass that on to their customers. A lot of their clients, they've won. Landscape Bryce spoke to, he's been cutting some of the same lawns since middle school. He still lives in the area where he grew up. And so he feels really bad, but he had to raise his prices $5 across the board, $5 at the beginning of the year. And now he's considering another price increase.
Jeez. The biggest cost, is it fuel for these guys? I guess maybe the big trucks they drive around, or, you know, the handheld trimmers or the lawnmowers themselves?
Yeah, fuel is a big one. Labor is, of course, another. You know, I think labor is the biggest cost here because it's really punishing work, especially in the summer. And so you want to make sure that you're fairly compensating people, even if in the case of this man I was talking about in St. Louis, his employees are his sons.
What stood out to me, too, kind of chump change in the grand scheme of things, but just the price of a belt for like a lawnmower from $60 to now $120.
It's really nuts. You know, everything has just gotten so much more expensive, and landscapers are saying that the margins have just gotten smaller and smaller, and some are having trouble breaking even.
Boy, so what are some of them doing besides raising prices to try to get by here?
So some people are cutting people who, you know, like dropping clients who are too far outside of a very small area to try to save money on gas. So if you live, you know, too far from the next closest house, your landscaper might drop you. So not only are landscapers more expensive, it's also a lot harder to hire one.
Wow. I think you capture that a little bit, but I think there was a woman in Oregon, right, who had kind of just moved in, and her neighbors basically said, good luck finding somebody.
Yeah, she was like, there's no hope. And then, you know, when she did a little bit of digging and figured out what landscapers were charging, she was like, there's just no way. You know, we can't rationalize this with the house itself being so much more expensive than she and her wife were anticipating it being.
So how about the folks who are now starting to do it on their own?
You know, people are having mixed experiences. The woman in Portland who, you know, was trying to hire a landscaper initially was like, I wasn't necessarily expecting to push. She has a little like manual mower, you know, and she was like, I'm thinking way more about the lawn than I ever expected to be. But some people are enjoying it. And they're like, I just, you know, put in my podcast and ride around on the sit down mower. And, you know, it's like my favorite chore on a Saturday.
Thanks, Rachel. Rachel Wolf, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, fun gifts for Father's Day. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save. We'll finish with this. The most popular gift categories connected to Father's Day are special outings, followed by clothing. But as someone who writes a column called Weekend Sip, Charles Passy at MarketWatch is naturally inclined to suggest a boozy gift. With that in mind, here are his picks. Number one, a cocktail kit. One's from Cocktail Courier, cover a range of spirits and mixed drinks. Charles likes the golf-themed Dewar's Lemon Wedge Cocktail Kit for $74.99. It provides you all you need, a bottle of Dewar's 12-year-old scotch, lemonade, and some soda water to make a lemon wedge, the official sip of the U.S. Open Golf Tournament. Number two, booze as coffee, Jack-flavored coffee. The folks at World of Coffee, a specialty roaster, have created such a brew. You get just enough of Jack Daniel's whiskey flavor, no actual booze though, to enhance your coffee without overwhelming it. It's about $15 a can. And to supplement your Father's Day gift, maybe you could impress Dad with dad jokes like, what did the ocean say to the beach? Nothing. It just waved. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.